Hello and good evening. Welcome to Jaguars This Week. Ryan Sexton along with Jeff Loggeman. And over the course of the next hour, we'll talk with you about the Jaguars, the National Football League, and anything else that might be on your mind this evening. Our phone number, as it's been in this room for more than 15 years, 355-NFL-1, 800-355-6351. Brian Sexton along with Jeff Loggeman. Joe is here as well.
Is he really? I didn't hear any music there.
No. He's... you're on his list now. You know, if you ever have a problem, a technical issue, and you say on the air, we're having technical difficulty, you get that look that you just got.
Yeah, it's all right.
Yeah, but we'll figure it out, folks, and Joe is working on that right now. So here's what I know, Logs, just to kind of throw it out there, and we'll talk about, obviously, where the labor negotiation is. I was talking to some folks who were involved in the Jaguars and the National Football League's interaction with labor, and at least they're following it closely, obviously.
Sure.
And it sounds like they're pretty certain things are going to get off on time. They don't know for sure, but as they go through their planning stages, it seems like they're starting to plan like maybe training camp's going to open the end of July and they'll get their preseason games in. And so it would seem like...
You better hurry up.
Yeah, well, that window is closing rapidly in order to get it all done on time.
But they really need the time, not too much from a preparation standpoint, but, I mean, in that window that we're talking about, I mean, you need time for not only to prepare the team, but also to sell tickets, to sell signage, to do all the things that kind of come along with being, you know, putting on a National Football League season.
Tickets being the key one.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and it's not just, you know, this market. It's all markets.
Every market.
You know, and people need a reason to hit the ticket, you know, the box office window. And until they can see it, you know, the people are going to kind of just sit back. And I understand that.
But it does sound like, at least from talking to some folks in here, that that's getting closer. And if you look, and we were talking about this probably an hour ago, if you look at what's going on with the commissioner, with the players' representative, that they're getting closer also. How do you read some of the things that you've seen?
Well,
the gentlemen going to Florida together.
Yeah, what you're speaking of is yesterday the Players Association held a rookie symposium, which typically the league puts on. And because, obviously, the labor issue that's been going on, the league said they weren't going to do it. The Players Association stepped up and said, we're going to do that. And from what I understand, they don't have every drafted rookie that's there. I'm sure economics plays a part in that for some of them because they don't have a way to get there.
Exactly.
Typically, the NFL flies them out there and on the NFL's dime.
Right.
I don't know how it's working as far as, you know, who's paying for it. Is the Players Association paying for it? But from what I understand, about 100 ballparks short of the draft class, which is, I think, 245. Is that about right?
I think it's like 270.
Is it?
Yeah, close.
Okay. And yesterday they had a meeting, and today Roger Goodell and Demaurey Smith ended up stepping out in front of the media. They didn't take any questions. They just made a statement, and I'm going to read that because I think it's important. The good thing is that they did speak together.
I was going to ask you your thought on them at the same time.
I like that. To me, I think that shows that things are kind of heading in the right direction. And I would probably be more concerned if those two were still in some city in the United States and hemmed up and still in negotiations, quote unquote. Now, I guess the attorneys for each side are meeting, which means that they're there just to work out some language and that most of the major details have been worked out. That's my take on it.
Okay.
But in this statement that they issued June 29th, which I believe is today, right?
Today.
Today's 29th, right?
Absolutely, it is.
Demaurey Smith said this, quote, "We obviously spoke to the rookie class here at the Business of Football Symposium. We are not going to take questions, but both of us wanted to come out and tell you that. We're continuing to work hard. Both of us felt that it was important to come down for this event. Obviously, what we are doing on the business side of football on a macro scale is about getting a fair deal done and trying to get back to the game and business of football as quickly as possible. This event was important to ensure that our young men appreciated how important we think these few days are. I'm thrilled that Roger could come down with us and talk to the rookies in a very good, direct way." Commissioner Goodell said this, "It was a great opportunity for us to be able to sit with the rookies. They obviously have a lot of questions. We answered the questions as best we could, but you all know that we're under certain restrictions. We're taking a break because we felt it was important to be down here with the players. We both have great respect, obviously, for the players. This is an important few days. We're going to get back to work, and then DeMaurice Smith closed it out with this. So we're going to go back in, get back to work on other issues. Thank you all. So to me, that's good stuff, you know. I'm still kind of the position, hey, you know, get it done and have a big announcement, you know, so right. We can all get back to being fans of football, and teams can get back to doing their best to abbreviate or to take what typically is a 5-month window and then shorten it down into a month. I mean, the time is running out.
John Osher joins us now, senior writer at Jaguars.com. Hey, Oshawa, you look a little wet.
It's a little wet.
You caught the rain?
A little bit.
Is it as advertised? Thunder, lightning, rain?
It was for a while, and okay. It's seems like it's starting to slow down a little bit.
I got a bone to pick with Osher.
Okay.
This top 10 list he put out, greatest Jaguars in history.
You were 11.
It's a great seg, by
not
the way.
About me. List, I think, was, you know.
You thought Bracken should be on the list?
Since I saw you a couple hours ago, I actually wasn't familiar with what you were arguing. I haven't been reading the Ozone lately, and I apologize. So I went back and read all the Ozones and got up to date on some of the flack that you've been catching at Jaguars.com for your list of the 10 greatest Jaguars players in history, and you did it kind of off the cuff in Ozone.
It's very much off the cuff. Now
instead
it's
of something
my first
formal.
Mistake.
Are we going to see something that's more formal now instead of off the cuff to maybe make amends with a few of the readers and me?
Perhaps, but
didn't you just say it wasn't about him? Didn't we hear that?
But
on
I'm
his
not
mouth?
Sure
it's not
that
about
it'll change
me. It's about the list.
Drastically.
But and me.
But yeah, I mean, I like to put things out there in the Ozone like that for some discussion purposes. And as I've said many times to people since I came back, a lot of these few months has been about me catching up and learning a lot about what happened for the last decade. And you know, you're smiling, and you think I missed on a few that that I covered, and maybe I did, but it's been interesting. We talked a little bit about Tony Brackens,
mm-hmm.
who's the one that everybody's sort of hammering me about, and I'll take the hammering, but
that's good. It's good though. I mean, to me, it's a great source of debate,
right,
and discussion.
Yeah, and it has been fun because we sort of differ on. Who should be at the top? I say Bocelli. You say Fred Taylor. Anybody who knows me, I'm a huge Fred Taylor supporter, huge Fred Taylor admirer. If he makes the Hall of Fame, I'll be one of the happiest, media people around. But I watched Tony for 5 or 6 years, and I still say Tony's the best Jaguar to play here.
Well, it was an interesting debate
because sure.
I told John this, Tony. If you take that window that in which he was healthy, which was, 3-4 years, because he had the one year he had a knee and he was coming back.
96, 97, 98.
Yeah.
Into the end of 99 before he got the
That's about
playoffs.
Right.
Yeah.
And to me, there was not a better tackle in the game, period, in that window. Some people could argue that Jonathan Ogden was right up there. And it might be a good argument.
He was.
I don't know. I don't think that Fred ever achieved that status in a 3-year window. But the long term look at Fred's career, what he was able to accomplish over time, to me cannot be ignored. And to me, I think longevity and the ability to do it for many years at a high level is worth more than the ability to do it for a year, 2 or 3, at the highest level.
You have been
in
hurt.
Rankings.
Right? He's been hurt.
I like that.
There
I
you
like
go.
That.
You know what? We're due for a break. Can we take it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I got plenty of bones to pick with him on that
Well,
list.
Let's go for it. Although I want to get your take, John. We were talking about the storm and how it had abated somewhat, and that's a perfect segue into the labor and your thoughts on
sure.
what's going on right now. Jeff Loggeman's here. John Osher, you can be here as well. 355-NFL-1, 800-355-6351. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. Live from Everbank Field in Jacksonville and only on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it. You good with that music, Logs?
That sounds
right
a lot
tempo,
better.
Right
yeah.
volume for you?
Thank you, Joe.
He exists to make you happy. Right, Joe? All right, so here we are, Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna at Burbank Field. We were talking about labor. Logs was giving his interpretation. What say you about... There seems to be a sense, at least in this building, that things have a greater degree or greater opportunity to start on time than they have. And that in the league, when you've got the commissioner and D. Smith together in Florida and negotiations going on 4 days this week, that it's just around the corner.
Yeah, I think it's all funneling toward getting done, first, second, third week of July, mid-July, and, sort of funneling toward everything being very, frantic and frenetic, but it all sort of coming together in time to have a relatively full training camp.
I asked the question of one person today, and I said, will you get all four preseason games in? And obviously the preseason games are very important to the franchise,
right?
Because that's money they don't share. The players don't get that money. And the answer was, yeah, we think so.
Yeah, and I think it's a think so.
Yeah,
it's 75% chance.
Yeah, nothing certain.
I would be absolutely stunned at this point if the regular season doesn't come off as written or scheduled or whatever.
9/11.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're saying opening week starting as it is scheduled.
Right. I'd always thought they'd get 16 in. I thought at one point they might have to fudge it a little bit.
Right.
Move games around. But I'd be surprised if they're this close and things, seem to be this, I don't know if amicable is the right word, but
well, I mean, you
things are trending in the right direction.
They rode the same plane and in the same SUV. I mean, they're they look like they're trying to replicate the relationship that Paul Tagliabue had with Gene Upshaw. It looks like they're trying to have that, what was the right way to describe it? Coexistence? I mean, the two men, respect.
Jeff may not be the right guy to ask that question.
Well, because of Gene, yeah.
Yeah, to me, I mean, I think both... Both guys, both leaders. I'm talking about Goodell, and obviously Demaurice Smith. I think they both have a lot to lose. I mean, I think Demaurice Smith would have more to lose than Roger Goodell, and will ultimately end up losing more than Roger, just because Demaurice Smith. I mean, holy cow, he's going to have to give something back. I mean, we don't know the details of it, but all the information that I don't want to say leaked out, but kind of been put out there is that the players aren't going to get quite as much, but there was, and I said this at the beginning, there's no way that Demaurice Smith was going to be able to come out of this looking rosy.
Right.
It's just a matter of how much of a hit he was going to take.
I think Goodell had a lot to lose and still does. If for some reason they would lose games and there would be any sort of a dip in fan interest, you don't want to be remembered as the guy who caused this thing to hiccup if you're the commissioner. There's been such steady growth and such a rise. You don't want to be the guy who screwed this thing up. And I'm not sure if it's possible to screw this up because the league's very dominant right now. But from a historical perspective, I think Goodell had a little bit to lose in that it's been such a period of steady growth for so long that if this time would be ever perceived in 5-10 years as the time where the league slipped, that'd be pretty bad because it's been a period of steady growth, and for so long it has looked like something that you couldn't screw up.
Yeah, the one thing though that I hope that kind of comes out of this, besides labor peace, is that the commissioner gets reined in a little bit. When he first took over from Paul Tagliabue, I was very impressed with his desire to clean up the league.
Personal conduct?
Yeah, and I'm talking about off-the-field stuff.
Right.
But I think he's gone too far with some of the on-the-field desires that he wants to implement in the game, in which the game was fine. And I think he's trying to change the game in a fashion that's not going to benefit the game overall. Some of the rules changes as far as hitting, I'm all for safety. But the way he's come down, the way things have been inconsistent, that has to change. The desire for an 18-game schedule is ridiculous, and to me is I don't get it. And he keeps saying about how the fans want it. No, the fans just don't want four preseason games. There's a difference in those two things. But through this process, I hope that Demaurice Smith and the Players Association garners a little more say in some of those things. Because I think the commissioner and some people that aren't football men have had too much input, and that has to stop.
355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. How difficult will it be, if not impossible, to get everything ready in a span of 3 weeks? I mean, draft class signed, free agent signed. They'll find a way to get a lot of it done, but, I mean, that looks to be an insurmountable task.
Well,
yeah,
it's going
to
be a mess.
It's going to be crazy, but I think that, you know, with this deal, obviously, is you're going to see the rookies take a drastic reduction in pay. And I think the system that they come to agreement on will solve a lot of those issues. So the biggest thing that's going to have to get done is free agency and the roster's filled out. But it can happen. But I can tell you, if we thought that Gene Smith burned the midnight oil in a regular season, every personnel guy, every staff member on every team may not sleep for weeks.
Jeff, I'll ask you this. How difficult is it, and this is something I've written a couple of times in the Ozone, that it's going to be difficult for that veteran free agent who signs, you know, say it's July 25th, he signs. And clearly there's going to be two or three veterans expected to come in and be impact guys to really help this defense. How long does that take? We all know the rookies, it's going to take a while because you have an off season. You know, usually, in a such as yourself, you get signed around March 15th.
Mm-hmm.
And you have 6 months to learn the defense. I would think the guys who they do sign better be pretty savvy football guys.
Oh, yeah, they're going to put a premium on the smart guys.
Right.
You know, because you do have a limited time. I mean, it's you're not going to want to go out there and sign a guy who needs repetition to learn. And so,
a lot
I mean,
of guys did.
That could be good for some. It could be bad for some. But, I mean, you know, I've said this for a long time. Football is not rocket science, but it is to some.
I've never heard you say that.
That's good.
I like it. You'll see that in the Ozone soon.
Oh, you might see it tomorrow.
Yeah, it is to some. All right, we've approached the bottom of the hour, which means news is next. Who are you evaluating tonight?
Nobody. The staff was on break this week.
Okay.
And so my
video is not accessible.
My room, my office, my video department.
Right.
Wouldn't let me in the door.
So sounds like he's evaluating the Ozone.
I have. Today I have given a thorough evaluation of the top 10 list created by John Osher at Jaguars.com, the Ozone.
So we'll close out June in Jaguars this week with a half an hour of witty banter then after the news on News Talk Radio, WOKV, depend on it. All right, 24 minutes left in the program. Brian Sexton, John Osher, Jeff Loggeman, Joe Fortunato. You know, I was thinking that this might be the most difficult offseason you'll ever have. You're coming back to a place where, as you said, you need to catch up on a decade, and you haven't really known what free agency hasn't been there. There have been no OTAs,
right.
No minicamps, nothing that you could work with. And then you go and you write what you think is an instant little column about 10 players,
sure.
And Logs is just laying in wait for you.
And rightfully so. That's sort of what I hoped would be the case. Not necessarily Loggeman, but somebody. You know, I threw it out there. Somebody threw it out there in a question. And, you know, I just wanted something for discussion. And, you know, so we're having discussion. But as I told you earlier, one thing I wanted to do this off season was sort of allow the readers of the Ozone and the site to sort of watch me sort of learn some of the things.
Right.
I try to learn a lot of what I do. And Jeff remembers from when I covered him. I try to talk to players and hear what they say and sort of learn from them. It's what I like doing as a reporter, and it's what I'm looking forward to doing this fall. Now Jeff can rip it.
All right, well, let me read your list.
We're going to try to talk about 10 more minutes to the next break, weren't you?
Sure.
And this is your list. Baselli is 1, Jimmy Smith at 2, Fred Taylor at 3.
I like my 3.
Maurice Jones-Drew at 4, Keenan McCardell at 5, Brunell at 6, John Henderson at 7, Leon Searcy at 8, Marcus Stroud at 9, and Rasheen Mathis at 10.
And I'll say this. As somebody who was away from the team when Stroud and Henderson played, I didn't do a whole lot of research into where to place them. From what you told me, Stroud was significantly better than Henderson.
Yeah.
And I'll be upfront in my ignorance on that one. And I even said, I think, in a couple of the comments, I didn't have a real inherent feel for the guys who played here when, you know, when I wasn't here. So I was hoping that by putting this out, perhaps that, you know, somebody could educate me on some of where these guys should be.
And to me, this is, it's great discussion because, first of all, who should the top 10 be?
Sure.
I mean, to me, that's the first thing that you got to do.
All right. So who's in there that doesn't belong then? If Brackens belongs, whose spot does he take?
To me, I think John Henderson, you could argue, doesn't belong on that list. But he's very close. You could make the argument that Mark Brunell.
Okay. Really?
Doesn't need to be on that list. You know, because to make the argument against Brunell being on that list, not that I'm saying that he shouldn't be, at least not yet, but look at who's on that list that you have right now. Baselli, Searcy, Jimmy Smith, Keenan McCardell, Fred Taylor. Mm-hmm. There's five guys that he was surrounded with.
And there's other guys that were on that who weren't bad. James Stewart wasn't bad.
No.
Yeah, so.
Kyle Brady and Pete Mitchell weren't bad.
No. So, I mean, you could say, well, geez, he had all these tools. You know, was it the tools that makes you put him on the list, or does he stand alone?
Okay, who else? Is there anyone else there to which you would say they don't belong or they're on the periphery?
I think you could say that, I mean, to me, I always say that you've got to do it for a period of time.
Okay.
Is it too early for Maurice to be on that list? And, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, gosh, he's got all these touchdowns. Yeah, I understand that. But is it too early yet?
I put him on there mainly, you know, he's...
Because he's on track to break Fred's touchdown record next year.
And for the last couple, you know, he was very productive early for the first 2 or 3 years. And then since he's gotten the full, you know, the full-time job, if you will, he's been one of the, you know, the best three or four running backs in the league.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So, you know, I would say he may be too high. I think it would be hard to argue that there's been 10 players more productive and are better for the franchise.
I think for the touchdown record, what's he got, 55, 56? I mean, he's within distance of Fred's record of 70. So he belongs there. I do get what you're saying, though. You know, my only thing, Searcy below Henderson didn't make sense to me. Because I thought Searcy was one of those rock, you know, big rock players.
Leon was the best right tackle in the game at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he was as good at his position.
And you could say that he was the best right tackle in the game every year
that he played.
That he wore the teal.
Yeah. And John,
could you come up with any other better right tackle in the game during that era?
Somebody did because he didn't make Pro Bowls. But looking back, I mean, that was always.
I know he got injured the one year where he tore the quadricep.
That was the end of it. Yeah, 2000.
Yeah, but for, you know, 96, 97, 98, 99, the 4 years that he was here, you know.
Best right tackle in football.
Yeah. You know, one of those years, John Ogden was a right tackle because he started at left guard and Tony Jones was still there, and then he went and played right tackle before moving to left. I'm having a hard time remembering the right tackles in the game.
Always do. I mean,
yeah,
right, somebody
in the
market would have trouble remembering Leon. I mean,
yeah, no, exactly.
It's not a position that people, you know, it's not one you discuss a whole lot,
no.
But he was certainly, you know, and again, it kind of goes back to what Jeff was saying. You know, boy, the talent at the important positions on that offense was, will be hard to match.
You know, and to me, Tony Brackens, you know, does he deserve to be on that list? I mean, probably the two biggest playmakers in Jaguars history on defense, Rasheen Mathis and, without a doubt, Tony Brackens.
No question.
And both of them, too, would be above a Donovan Darius, who Donovan would have to have some consideration on that list.
Yeah.
Because of his longevity, his production,
Well, he was their tackle leader until Darryl Smith passed this year. So,
you know, and see, then, I missed a lot of Donovan. When I saw him, I thought that I thought he was a very, very good player.
A good player, not a great player.
He perhaps got you beat while he made plays at the same time. And you can say that about a lot of secondary. I mean, that's not uncommon of a secondary player.
Yeah, but, and the other ones, too, that I think you got to even bring into the conversation, Darryl Smith, Brad Meester. Just because, I mean, they've been doing it for so long, and they've been doing it at a high level. I mean, Brad Meester, holy cow. I mean, to me, this is a great debate.
Sure.
I mean, but, you know, it's difficult to get the 10.
That. Right.
Let's grab Jeff, who's over in Ortega. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Yeah, how you doing, sir? I got a couple of comments. One's about players from the list and then maybe a scheme for the Jaguars. But how about these names? How about Mike Hollis, Aaron Beasley, and Greg Jones?
No, in my opinion.
I'm with you.
Mike Hollis, excellent kicker. If you look at his accuracy during that era, it was very high. But, I mean, to me, you got to kind of compare it to the guys that are kicking now, and their percentage is way, way higher than what it was. Aaron Beasley, heck of a football player. Love the guy. Great personality. Yeah. I mean, he's got everything in the world you could possibly imagine going for him. Held the interception record for a while.
Yeah, but a very good player, not a great player.
No, good, very good player. Certainly worthy of conversation,
sure,
though, of you know, being in the best defensive players in Jaguars history.
Okay.
You want guys like Aaron on your team, without question.
Yeah.
I mean, you need him.
Yeah, if you have a bunch of them, you're a really good team.
If you're going to be in the top 10 list, you got to be a game changer.
Yeah.
I think somewhat, except for I say that with one kind of statement here, and it's the same complaint that I have with the Hall of Fame, and I alluded to this with John earlier, in that the Hall of Fame has way too many skill positions and doesn't factor in enough of the big guys, and particularly the interior of the offensive line and defensive linemen. You know, so I take it with that. What was the last one you said, Jeff?
Greg Jones, but it's for the position that he plays.
The position would say no. And I thought Greg Jones was the best fullback in football last year.
But not a game changer.
But the game has changed to where fullbacks aren't game changers anymore. But you make excellent points, because all those three guys, I mean, they're in discussion.
Well,
but I don't put them in there.
Yeah, I have additional comment. I'd like to see Dave Girard under center more. That way, they don't know if we're going to pass or run, and maybe have a back in the flanker slot, and then maybe two backs behind him. But you got a good show. I'll listen off the air.
Thank you, Jeff.
I don't think of Girard as being in the shotgun all that much.
No, he's not. But you got to remember one thing. He said David under center more for the threat of run. One of the best plays that they have is a shotgun alignment quarterback draw. So it's not like coordinators are saying, well, it's just pass. So just quick.
I don't know what the percentages are of how they've used him, shotgun or not shotgun. But, you know, I don't sense that it's overwhelming. It's not like Peyton Manning in the shotgun, who operates from it predominantly.
Yeah.
Different offense entirely. Appreciate the call. Let's grab another one before we break. We've got Brad on the north side of Jacksonville. Hello, Brad. Welcome to the show.
Hey. I just wondered if Jeff had already watched Rod Isaac, because I don't think I've heard his opinion yet on Rod Isaac.
Yeah, Brad, I watched all of the highlights stuff and some games of him, and next week, if I get my access back when the vacation ends for some of the staff folks here, then I've got two remaining. It's Rod and
Przinski.
I will do them two in the next couple weeks.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
I want to watch really a little interested. More of Rod Isaac, but I just to give you a precursor, I liked what I saw. I love the way how he's a physical corner, loves to hit. I think he can immediately contribute as a nickel-type player, certainly in a dime, which they go to six defensive backs. He won't back down from contact. Got a chance to develop into maybe a starter. The other thing that I will add to it also, Brad, is that the guy that played with Rod Isaac, the other corner, was pretty doggone good too.
Maybe an undrafted rookie free agent.
Good. They were similar numbers, and you actually had to distinguish, because when you're watching a lot of those small college tapes, the clarity's not there.
Right.
I mean, it's like, you know, old home video. And so when you get to, you got to get a real close up to make sure of the number between these two corners. And then eventually I kind of figured out one of them always wore like a towel on his hip, and so you could kind of distinguish him from them. But both the corners that they had there at, what was the school again?
Middle
Tennessee State were pretty good. And Isaac, I liked what I've seen so far. I just want to see a little bit more.
We need a break. Before we go, real quick, do you remember, speaking of videotape that's tough to see, do you remember a couple years ago when they drafted Anthony Maddox out of Delta State?
Yeah.
And we watched that video.
It just, someone,
and it was like someone
wasn't
was
that
using
bad.
Phone.
Wasn't that bad.
In a high school stadium.
Yeah. Wasn't that bad, but it was, some of it's not so good.
All right. We'll take a break. Come back. Probably 10 minutes left in the program. Jaguars this week, live from Everbank Field. After this on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it. All right, about 6 minutes left in the program this evening. Did we finish out that topic, or is there something else that you'd like to say?
I think that next week we ought to each come in with our own lists and see how they compare.
All right. I thought maybe we were going to say the worst 10 Jaguars.
Oh, somebody sent one of those. They didn't run it, but it was pretty good.
Do you remember who it was? Or do you not want to run it?
Oh, there were the names that you would expect. I mean, it was, you know, RJ and the whole thing. So, I mean, the easy shots, but it was amusing.
Yeah, that's no fun. That's too easy.
Yeah. I mean,
it'd be fun to come up with a list, though.
By the way, Anthony Cesario
passed away last fall.
A lot of Jaguar fans probably don't even know that.
He had a heart attack while hunting, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was it in Colorado?
It
was.
I know that he actually was working. I talked with Brant Boyer a few weeks ago, and Anthony was working with Brant, and just boom.
Yeah.
I mean, just instantly. I mean,
he would have been mid-30s too, right?
He was too young to die, I can tell you that.
He was draft choice in 97. You know, Cesario was a pretty good guy.
Yeah, a good guy.
I'll never forget him coming off the field with Baselli, first minicamp that year with that rookie class, and it was raining like hell, and they brought everybody in because it was lightning. And he turned, and Vic and I were walking, and he turned in and goes, Who's 79? Where did he come from? Well, that's the third round pick. You're kidding. He's terrible. He can't even get in a stance.
Yeah.
And it was like, uh-oh.
He wasn't very good. And what a shame. And by the way, Brant Boyer interviewed, just to give people an update on Brant Boyer. He's doing very well. Got two youngins now, happily married, which we never thought would happen.
No.
Nope. Not with Brant.
Good guy too, Brant.
Very, very active in some different businesses, and he actually interviewed for an NFL job.
As a scout or a coach?
As a coach. Thought he was going to get it, and I'm not going to say where it was, but he did not get it, and he's thinking about getting him because he actually did the coach's intern program, former players will come in and help out in training camp.
Okay.
He did that in Cleveland under Mangini.
Okay.
And I don't know if he did it for one or two camps, but he did a little bit of that, and he was going to come back to the game as a coach and was hoping that he would get the job and didn't end up getting it. But, you know, he would be a great coach.
Yeah, he would be.
His personality, one of the greatest, you know, if we had to make a list of top 10 personalities.
Fun people.
That we've had, you know, your experiences with, and both of you guys.
He was great.
And in my experiences in the locker room, Brant Boyer would make the top 10, hands down, bar none.
Kyle Brady's near the top of that list, too, in terms of just the looseness. I don't think either of you guys were on the airplane. In fact, I know you weren't, because you were working with Fox at the time in 2001, and it was the Chicago game. And we were coming back from Chicago. Remember, they moved that from week two because of 9/11.
Is this where he got on the intercom and imitated Coughlin?
No, he didn't imitate Coughlin. He imitated one of the more feminine characters on Saturday Night Live and was inviting all the players to come to the
I think I was on the one that he imitated Coughlin.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah, you were. I think it was a
preseason game.
Yeah, it would. I mean, you're talking about, people know the story about him running around in a Speedo and a drill sergeant. I mean, Kyle was just the kind of guy that kept everything loose and fun.
See, I never saw that side of Kyle.
Oh.
So it was a different, yeah.
Yeah, Kyle has that stoic side that you
right.
see, but you're talking about, and I did games with him in NFL Europe, so I spent enough time with him to see him. But, I mean, boy, does he have a huge personality.
Okay.
Huge personality.
Yurkovic would be one of the best.
He'd be
have to be near the
certainly
top.
From your perspective.
Oh, he was, yeah. he was terrific to the, you know, with the media to the point of almost being too,
yeah,
too good.
Yeah, which some of us in the locker room thought that too.
Yeah.
We were like, hey, John, you know.
Enough.
Can you shut your mouth right. once in a while?
And he really couldn't.
Not you, Osher. I mean, Yurkovic. That was my statement to him a few times.
I wish I could tell you the story that we had when he first came in as a free agent in the spring of 1996. I did an interview with him in what's now the Jumbotron room. And it was like, how do I pronounce it? Is it Yurkovic? Is it Yurkovic? I can't say on the air what his response was. You can only imagine it.
Sure.
I'll tell you at the break. And it was just, it was classic John Yurkovic. And which is why he's so successful with his radio show in Chicago.
He may have been probably one of the greatest players in NFL history at having anticipation, knowing where the play would go. Because nobody can play the game in the NFL with a body like that unless you had an edge. And that was his edge.
That's well said. Because he did not look like a football player.
Bad body.
Yeah, should not have. In looking at him during training camp, if you didn't know who the players were, no way you'd have thought he made the team.
Keenan goes to the top of fun
he
guys.
He had the same
locker room
body as the equipment manager, Bobby Monica. Neither one of them were good.
Keenan was always fun in the locker room because you could get him going pretty easily. That was never an issue. And I'm trying to think of other guys. Paul Spicer would have to be near the top of the list.
Yeah.
Guys that were not a lot of fun, although I don't know because I wasn't in the locker room all the time, but boy, Gary Walker was a pain in the butt.
Yeah. He
good player.
Yeah, he talked too much.
Well, and he was the guy that would pop up. You come back tomorrow and tell me. And then you'd be, hey, Gary, you said to come back today. Yeah, I ain't talking to you today.
Yeah, Fred was awfully good in the locker room from our perspective.
Fred was great.
But it was because guys with integrity are the guys that I like.
Yeah, glad you can look in the eye. All right, guys, appreciate it. Have a great night. Talk to you next week. Enjoy Independence Day, everybody.